19 minutes after 4 o'clock, it is downtown on your Wednesday afternoon. Our next guest is a tremendously talented journalist, critic, and biographer who has written acclaimed books about Brian Wilson and the Beach Boys, Bruce Springsteen, Paul Simon, Paul McCartney, Warner Brothers Records, and he's got a great new book out entitled The Name of This Band is R.E.M., A Biography. We were happy to catch up earlier today with our friend, author Peter Ames Carlin.
Cool. Hey, Rich.
Hey, Peter, good to talk with you again. Man, the book is so great, and learned so much about the band, but also learned a lot about what was a pretty thriving music and arts scene in Athens, Georgia back in the day.
Yeah, you know, it's fascinating because it's such a small little town, you know, in the northwest corner of Georgia. You know, you don't, and yet it produced, like, all these incredibly popular, incredibly cool bands, you know, starting with the B-52s and then R.E.M. and other bands that are, you know, sort of more arty and culty, like Pylon and Love Tractor, that really made an impact around the country in the 80s. And, you know, it's interesting how these little scenes develop. And at in Athens, it was really not just the university, but actually the art school where so many of these bands came out of. You know, a lot of these bands, all those bands I just mentioned, had members that were art students, and there was something about the aesthetic of the place and the spirit of the place that encouraged, you know, not just artistry, but experimentation and individuality, and, you know, sort of through this kind of avant-garde set of principles. And in a weird way, you know, that allowed for these people to create a kind of very, very distinctive, you know, artistic and yet somehow appealing form of pop music.
I love the story of how the band got together, but I think my favorite origin story is the, I guess we could call it hate at first sight between Mike Mills and Bill Berry.
Yeah, they met when they were in, I think, in junior high school, as like 13-year-olds. And Bill Berry was, you know, he's a very, very bright guy, you know, very ambitious. But at the time, he was kind of a crabby kid who didn't like school or classes and, you know, and teachers. And he saw Mike Mills, who was this neatly dressed young man with good manners who did very, very well in school. And he just thought, what a pencil neck geek that guy is. Didn't want anything to do with him. But the moment they ended up sort of accidentally playing music together, you know, Bill was a drummer, Mike was a great bass player. They just clicked in together, and through the music and through their natural affinity for one another as musicians, they just sort of fell in love, you know, and became best friends and still are to this day, which is sort of sweet.
How important to the band's early success was their strong relationship with college radio and obviously to their fans?
It was extremely important. I mean, they did this thing that, you know, most bands don't do these days just because of the way that the media and the industry has changed, where they started out as just four kids, you know, in a station wagon driving from town to town, and they would go to, like, the next pizza parlor or nightclub or, you know, that had a new wave night or whatever, and play their music and also get to know the fans there and became friends and, you know, and found their way to other college campuses. They were college-aged at the time. And it was just, they just had a very natural affinity with the people that, you know, were going to be interested in their music and took great pleasure in getting to know folks. And that way, sort of almost hand to hand, built this huge audience around the country so that, you know, that were first following them on college radio stations. And then as they sort of made that leap into mainstream radio, went with them. And, you know, with that solid foundation of support, they managed to create, you know, a big national career.
We're talking with Peter Ames Carlin about his terrific new book, The Name of This Band is R.E.M. From the start, they were determined to do things their own way, and that certainly manifested itself in their approach, at least in the early years, to making music videos.
Absolutely. At first, you know, Michael Stipe, who was the, you know, the lead singer in the band and kind of the front man, you know, again, was an art student who had a very strong sense of aesthetics and what he thought was important, and at first absolutely resisted the idea that play their instruments, which virtually every other artist did at the time, and created these weird, almost little avant-garde art films to go along, you know, to sort of illustrate their songs on MTV and elsewhere. And of course, you know, at first MTV and all the other, you know, video outlets didn't want anything to do with them, but demand for their music got so intense as the years went by. And they eventually evolved, and Michael learned how to, you know, he saw enough videos that he thought were powerful and important artistically, where people actually did do lip syncing, that he came to understand that that was just a different kind of performance, and that he could view it with a different set of expectations. And, you know, and then they ended up making, you know, the first serious lip sync video that they did was for Losing My Religion, which is an absolutely spectacular piece of art on its own terms, and broke through and became hugely successful.
They had such a successful string of albums for a decade or more, each one bigger, achieving greater success from the last. But you had a great analysis when you wrote that extraordinary success is less fun and more destabilizing than it might seem.
Yeah, you know, I mean, one of the benefits of their taking their time, you know, and spending those years in the van going from town to town and building their career is that they also built a really strong sort of internal foundation, you know, their friendships, their with one another, their support for one another. And as their, you know, as their success grew and as the demands of the popular culture became more profound and invasive, they could protect one another and gird one another. And so when they actually did become global superstars in the early and mid-90s, they could do it with a sense of, you know, without losing themselves and without sacrificing their friendships and, the, you know, the mutual support they had for one another. So even, you know, when they get to the mid-90s and they did that, you know, and had back-to-back-to-back, you know, 10-plus million selling albums and had this huge global tour, you know, with the entire world just obsessively focused on where they were and what they were doing, they didn't lose their grasp, you know, and fall victim to so many of the other things that take out other bands, you know, the ego fights, drugs, and all that stuff. They were largely immune from that just because they grew up before they grew their audience to that extent.
The departure of Bill Berry, obviously a big turning point in the band's history, but I love Michael Stipe's initial comment, I guess a three-legged dog is still a dog.
Yeah, you know, and then I think he continued his thought saying you just have to learn to run in a different way. And it was an awkward transition for them. You know, the next record was a little more difficult to make, and they had to kind of reconfigure how their creative chemistry worked because they were used to Bill being, you know, not only, you know, a fourth creative member who could bring in cool music and but also had a sense of structure and kind of almost an editor-in-chief role in the band where everybody trusted him to be the guy who could keep them in line, you know, sort of keep their different sort of opposing instincts in line so that they had a, you know, this kind of perfect balance of artistry and kind of popular, you know, a sense of what would be accessible to people. But they still went on and made a lot of really cool, successful music in the second half of their career.
The book is, the name of this band is R.E.M., a biography. It is, as always, Peter, a tremendous read, so well-researched and great analysis, and has just added to my already pretty big appreciation of the band and has made me go back and revisit their music once again. Thanks, as always, for being with us, and wish you much success with the book.
My pleasure, Rich. Thanks for having me.
So much fun talking to Peter. The book is terrific. If you're an R.E.M. fan, you will love it. The name of this band is R.E.M. Peter Ames Carlin here on Downtown.